Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky, but Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Black Friday deals are going on all month long. Save up to 45% site-wide, plus free professional installation right now at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Welcome back to the second hour of Amplify, where our guest is Errol Johnson. He has written a book titled Finding Comfort During Hard Times. In the book, he'll tell you so much about what you need to be prepared for and how to deal with it, what you should do, what you shouldn't do, contents of a disaster kit from ready.gov, additional emergency supplies, and just so much that comes from the mind, his mind, and helping, having experienced so much, but so much that comes from the heart and the soul, because he points out that for a chaplain, feeding the hungry can also be viewed as sacramental, while at the same time in natural disasters, and that's one of the titles of one of the chapters that he writes, he points out that disasters are not entertainment. But new meteorology science can predict where major hurricanes are going to make landfall. And so science and technology have revolutionized weather forecasting. That helps us to be more prepared. And there are alerts now, but people have to determine, well, are we going to stay or are we going to go? What causes more harm? But Errol, not every... buddy, and you made some reference to it earlier, who responds to a disaster is there to help the victims and survivors, are they?
No, unfortunately not. And we have a number of folks that are legitimate. One of the ways to tell whether someone is potentially doing harm is, you know, first of all, ask if they're a member of an organization. It can be national or it can be local. And do they have any specialized training in disaster? Have they been oriented to the disaster? Do they know what they're going into? Have they been specially invited to come to this particular disaster? And asking, you know, even local clergy can ask these questions, because a lot of times there's the assumption that, hospitality is boundless and that there are no limits on need, so the more the merrier. And we've seen how well-intentioned people can clog the pipeline from getting goods and services to the people who really need it. And it's just one of those things, because it's hard for people to see these images on TV, and they want to help, and they want to do something. There's something about jumping in the car and going. There's also something about being able to write a check where the money can go where it's most needed. But these are all issues that make disaster response very, very complex.
You write about managing comfort, and you've been talking just a little bit about it right now, that how does one select the best persons to provide comfort after a disaster, and you refer to managing volunteers is sacred work, that spiritual care professionals know when to refer to mental health, and that hospice chaplains are better prepared to deal with many of the situations, and chaplains know how to be with persons of all major faith traditions, as well as those who claim no faith tradition. But you also point out that there is nothing like a disaster to bring out the best in the worst in people. Why is that?
Well, it's such an intense event, and it pushes us. It takes us to a new reality, a new norm, it's the intensity, because there's also the impact, which is traumatic, and so there's a heroic phase where people, you know, can lift cars off of injured, and you know, the spotlight is on, and then, you know, there are other phases, but it's an intense moment, and it's also a shock to hear what has transpired or if something else is going to transpire, but it does bring out the best and worst in people.
Yeah, some suffer from compassion fatigue, and you write, the justice personalities may clash with the added stress from that disaster and accompanying pressure to help people. Feelings may be hurt or abused. The pressure to comfort sometimes becomes just pressure. Emotions may already be raw, and wounds fresh from loss of life and compelling stories of rescue and survival. Prior abuse and trauma may cause volunteers to act out, and again, close supervision and communication is vital to ensure the safety of disaster clients, but also disaster volunteers. Being humanitarian and responding to humanitarian disasters is altruism at its best. Predatory behavior on these operations is the worst, and in some cases may be criminal. Stress is no excuse. Dying to be loved? Try volunteering for one's church or temple, or talk to a counselor. Take care of your own needs first before deciding to volunteer. And in 9/11, you had to select some of those people. You helped in that process, didn't you?
I did. We had over 3,000 clergy that showed up in New York City that wanted to work in the Family Assistance Center and be available for counseling, or, you know, where the meals were being served, or supporting the mortuary operations. But out of these 3,000, only 800 were selected, because it was such an extreme event that it called upon for a higher credential set, implying that those people that had a degree in theology or mental health knew how to comfort people, as opposed to someone coming in off the street, as if that could have happened. But recruiting trained, competent professionals, training them, you know, making sure that they're screened, that they don't have any ulterior motives for showing up, like they're not trying to build up their counseling practice. It just, you can't imagine what you encounter. But I always go back, Father Ron, to this is sacred work. Management is sacred, but, you know, serving our fellow man and is to me, it's sacred. And even though I worked for a big humanitarian organization, even though I had to be neutral for over 10 years, it still didn't change who I was, but also it helped me work as a member of a team, and that's also not to be discounted throughout all this complexity and all these themes that we're going through this evening.
And some of the reasons why, or one of the reasons why these people who want to help must be prepared and trained properly is because you point out that high pressure, highly successful response operations can cause catastrophic health issues among those who respond to such disasters.
Very true. I'm not breaching any kind of patient confidentiality, but disaster work is very stressful, and there were a number of cardiac events in disaster response just because of the long hours and the different types of pressure, you know, poor diet, not enough sleep, et cetera. It makes you far more susceptible to having some kind of injury or breakdown.
And there is a mantra. Tell us a little bit about the meaning of the mantra, stay, pray, pay.
Well, this is a hard one. It's hard because it's so simple. When we first hear about a disaster, it's sort of sit and collect ourselves, collect our thoughts, pray, ask for divine guidance. What should I do? How can I help? And then the majority of times, unless you have the specialized training or these special competencies, the best thing you can do oftentimes is make a small donation or large donation, because then it can be used for things that are really needed, as opposed to being inundated with clothes or foodstuffs that need to be sorted, and sometimes are not able to get to the people that really need them.
Mm. Some of the ways to comfort that you list under this heading, under the heading of managing comfort, are play music that's light and uplifting, find some sunlight to sit in. I'm just moving around to all of them. Remind others to take their medication. Silently say a gratitude prayer. Silently give a blessing. Find beauty where you are and call attention to it. Help remember and develop rituals of meaning. Give glory. Give something. So giving is what it's about more than anything else, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that acknowledging that we are all God's creation, and many of us have been ordained with so many different gifts and skills, that you are enough sometimes to serve and to be there, this list is part of reflections of taking care of yourself. But it's also a prelude to taking care of others.
We've been talking about natural disasters and those things that have with which mankind, humankind, has been afflicted. But there are everyday traumas you write about. Tell us about some of the everyday traumas that we face in life.
Well, the first one that comes to mind is divorce, and it just is so traumatic for those because, you know, when you and I have counseled young couples before they got married, everything seems to be hunky-dory, and you can't imagine how two people can grow apart. And this is also horrendous suffering on the part of the spouses generally, and it's traumatic to go through a divorce, and it's traumatic for the children, it's traumatic for the greater family, and I say it, you know, it's traumatic for those institutions you're a part of, whether it's the church or whether it's the school, because you know, we're called we're called to love one another, and if that is the case, then things like spouse abuse, things like violence against men and women, issues of child abuse, all of those things are really unacceptable and are disasters within themselves. I was working in the emergency room in Brooklyn, and a young boy came in, and his father had thrown a bone at him, like a large dog's bone, and hit him on the head, and he was traumatized. But you know, we hope and pray that these things don't happen, but they do.
And some of the ways to comfort: take care of yourself. Be part of a team of comforters assessing your community's emotional health. You don't have to comfort everybody. Be curious and respectful. Give affirmation to others who may be comforters. Take time to remember special people in your life. Never lose your sense of awe and wonder, as it will lift your emotions and spirits. Laughter can be comforting and defy fear. Celebrate the good times, know what's special, and claim your authority. To mourn is to remember the love. Comfort is always valued. Select one of these and amplify on it just a little bit.
Well, the second one about being a member of a team, you have to be mindful that you don't have to do everything yourself. And whether it was the Haiti earthquake or whatever, I worked with a mental health professional, a nurse, a caseworker, and a mental health professional when we were doing a repatriation of remains of those Americans that had died in the earthquake. And it was good to have four other colleagues in the room supporting one another, each with a specific task, and then we would call the chapter and work with the chapter through their process of actually contacting the family. But again, this whole idea that being in an integrated care team, you don't have to do everything yourself. You don't have to know everything. You don't have to be the lead on everything. Just remember, be a part of the team.
And you don't believe that we should compare disasters. Why is that?
Well, you automatically get into trouble.
Good reason.
You say, like, oh, my disaster was bigger and bad or bigger and worse than, excuse my grammar, than yours. And it's not a and not to be compared, because you've been to one disaster, you've experienced one disaster. That disaster is unique. It may have some of the characteristics of another disaster you've been a part of, but you need to be focused. You need to be clear that this is another hurricane, and what happened during the one before this one may not happen during this one. So don't compare disasters, because also people are human and sometimes they will get hurt because they will feel that you're not taking their pain, their suffering seriously enough, or discounting the amount of pain and suffering that they've endured or are enduring.
Right. When we come back after this next break, we're going to talk about families and comfort, about children and disaster, and show how comforting is showing mercy, and then also the future of comfort, that we comfort because we care, we comfort because we love. We'll be back after this break. Welcome back to the final 20 minutes, a little more than 20 minutes of Amplify with our guest, Earl Johnson, titled the book, Finding Comfort During Hard Times, A Guide to Healing After Disease, Violence, and Other Community Traumas. Not only does he share his experience with you, but it's all founded on information that he's received from other organizations, national, international organizations, plus personal experience from so much experience he's had during the whole course of his life. And we just finished talking about everyday traumas, divorce, unemployment, that's certainly going on in the pandemic now, murder, we've seen some of that happening in some of the larger cities, sexual abuse, unexpected accidental death, death of a pet, and the AIDS pandemic, which we want to talk a little bit before we end our program this evening. Chapter 9 is Families and Comfort. And we're talking about it now, but he writes about children and disaster. When dealing with a disaster, children develop resilience through the modeling of their parents or guardians. They deal with adversity with a sense of justice and fairness, based upon their early formative learning. In pediatrics, the family unit is paramount in treating the child. A little bit later, he writes, age-appropriate discussions need to be held with the children of disaster and those who witness these events on television or social media. Just as children have spiritual lives, they also have an elemental sense of justice and fairness and need to be spoken to with honesty and care. Children always need to be considered as a special population with their own maturity and emotional and spiritual needs. Amplify on that a little bit, Earl, if you would, please.
Well, when we were working on the psychological first aid curriculum in Washington, D.C., we were working with a number of mental health professionals, and we almost had the curriculum set. And then someone asked, what about the children? And I said, well, you know, children have spiritual lives, and just as they have emotions, and sometimes children have a spiritual maturity beyond their years. And we need to talk to them, of course, in an age-appropriate manner, but they also need to know that they're safe with you, they're safe with their parent or guardian, and that no matter how bad things are, you're going to get through this. There is hope because you are together, and it's not about solely putting on a brave face. It's about including your children in the discussions, but again, not to scare them, but just to appraise them that, you know, this is a difficult time, and, you know, the family is going to have to make sacrifices, you know, we're going to have to deal with the death of a grandparent, perhaps, along with unemployment, any number of issues, fear of contagion. But children absorb all of our stress. They're sponges. And again, we don't know how many children, you know, they turned on the television to watch the September 11th activities. And we know that that was potentially harmful to those kids that were witnessing the fall of the Twin Towers.
And I can understand why you also write and include the perpetrator's family is in need of comfort and support. We don't always think of that, do we?
No, and we've seen some extraordinary models of forgiveness, particularly around the Mother Emanuel shootings in South Carolina, that the identity of, you know, the daughter of someone slain at the church is not going to be how that person defined themselves. They have forgiven, but again, this goes beyond the theory and into the practice, and it is so unique to the individual and to circumstances and the appropriateness, and it just adds to the complexity of these disasters.
And you write, some considerations can be made to assist those who respond to critical events as they seek to care for those with profound, instant, unimaginable wounds. And the advice that you give, and again, I'm just reading a little bit of each of what are 9 points in this list. Be prepared wherever you are. Knowledge, lessons, anxiety. There's much more wisdom you add to this, that one. Whether claimed as an act of war or criminal event, first things first. Search and rescue before rescue and recovery. Terror may not be, quote-unquote, random, orchestrated for maximum physical, psychological, and spiritual pain. Disasters happen, and combined with wars, declared or undeclared, injuries are physical, emotional, and spiritual. The physical wounds may respond to treatment and heal, but the emotional and spiritual injuries may never completely heal. It's important to remember those who have died. Ask their families and loved ones what they would like to have or planned. Do not exclude those who have lost the most. Be prepared for the second wave of response in these mass fatalities. People are always afraid of those who are different. The key is to educate ourselves and learn to embrace differences. Amplify on any one of those points that you might like to.
Well, we are part of the scarcity that people feel of the moment, and the fear of contagion, of getting COVID, and fear of, you know, being able to pay the rent or provide food. These are extraordinary issues, and they beg for solutions. When you have 170,000 people who have died of COVID, you can't say their individual names. But I applaud the media for taking two or three of them each evening and telling their stories briefly on the evening news. If you're sick, you're different. And then it's like the fear that I'll get ill too, or the prohibition of visiting. It all adds to the complexity, but I think I'm maybe getting away from the subject at hand, but I wanted to include before our conference, our interview concluded is, you know, we are all impacted by these disasters, but some are impacted more. And we had a whole generation of clergy that left Oklahoma City after the federal building bombing. And many of them not only left the locality, Oklahoma, they also left the church. They left their vocations. And we are chewing up a generation. I'm hoping that we're not, but the tremendous mental health and spiritual health needs of our care providers, our healthcare professionals, including our hospital chaplains that are dealing with so much mass death. But as I say, some places it's much worse than others. But we have to be mindful that we've got a whole generation of young people that have been traumatized and are dealing with loss and grief and pain.
And how do we begin to deal with that?
Well, we use our faith. We help people identify sources of hope, sources of meaning in their life. We help to remind them, you know, that how they got through a tough situation before, but this one may be tougher than any all of the others, but don't compare a disaster because, you know, we have the temptation of saying, well, AIDS was horrible, Ebola was horrible, SARS was horrible, now COVID is horrible. These things just happen. Well, not necessarily, because we're called. We're called to help people mourn because the world is different now. The world has changed to the new normal, and you have people dealing perhaps with loss of a loved one, and it's an extraordinary time. It's a very, very sacred time, just as you are in a hospice with end-of-life care. You know, there are so many dynamics now in our medical centers with our healers, we have to really, really watch them and see who may need a little more help, you know, than others, because a lot of our new residents haven't dealt with this magnitude of death before.
And that touches upon your list of ways to comfort. In the chapter on families and comfort, say thank you to a policeman or fireman today. Express gratitude to helpers in the community. Clarify and illuminate hope. If it was wrong before the disaster, it's wrong during and after the disaster. Children are not invisible and are impacted by disasters and need comfort. Do not impose your cultural norms on others with different cultural norms. Talk to children honestly, but age appropriately. Ask about someone's family with care and no judgment. And then in the chapter, last final chapter, is titled The Future of Comfort. And again, I spoke the first part of these sentences before. We comfort, you write, because we comfort, because we care. We comfort because we love. We are the sum of our experiences that allow us and require us to comfort. That says a whole lot. We are the sum of our experiences that allow and require us to comfort. So I can look back in my own life at a lot of different moments. Being 80 years old now, I have a lot of memories. Sometimes they're hard to remember, but nevertheless, the real powerful ones you never forget. And I feel like what I learned so many years ago in that experience has expanded, and I've learned more from it today than I did even then.
Oh, absolutely. And as I say, you know, you're a living library, like in Japan, where they treat the elders with great sanctity because of the sum of your experiences. And you know, just looking about, you know, what has occurred and transpired by way of disasters in Pittsburgh, the synagogue shooting, we would be remiss not to hold those families and loved ones in our prayers. It's a phenomena that I came to gradually, you know, it's been an honor to have this sort of awareness because I had mentors. I had people who took an interest in me and coached me or advised me to go or do certain things. And as I say, it's another way of saying you love someone when you encourage them. If you're that person that said the kind word or urged someone to continue on a life vocation or a path of service to others, it's just an extraordinary gift.
And you write that you couldn't have been one of the founders of Disaster Spiritual Care if you had not lived through the AIDS epidemic in New York City. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I had a number of friends getting sick, and, you know, people sort of one day they were there, the next day they were dead. The person who cut my hair, the place where I bought my flowers, it began to be, oh my gosh, you know, what's happening? How do you get this? How is it transmitted? Should I touch a door handle? Should I drink from a public water fountain? And, you know, the Cabrini sisters, where I ended up being the Protestant chaplain, they were one of the first hospitals that took AIDS patients, even when everyone was scared to death, because they didn't know how it was transmitted. Plus, the population was suspect. It was primarily striking gay men and blood recipients and Haitians. And so people ask me, well, what's your preparation for disaster? I always tell them, well, how about the AIDS epidemic? Because that was a huge catastrophic disaster.
And you write, we can't prevent all disasters from occurring. They are part of life. But if we devote ourselves to these basic public commitments, all society will be improved and social justice championed and embraced. Alongside the four freedoms enshrined as freedom of worship, freedom from want, freedom from fear, and freedom of speech, this is my blueprint for hope. This is what I hope continues to be called, quote-unquote, America. And hope is sacred. In a disaster, a strong community with strong institution and leaders will hasten recovery even in the worst possible scenario, and that will comfort all of us. So we end our interview on your blueprint for hope. So, Earl Johnson, thank you so very much for being with us and for this book.
Father Ron, thank you. My pleasure.
Finding Comfort During Hard Times. God bless you and all those you love.
And you too.
All right. Good night. I just have some final thoughts that, and as I indicate, there's so much more here in this book than I'm able to cover. But don't I say that almost every week, don't I? I probably should stop saying it. But that is the truth, even in 2 40-minute segments. And I have an opportunity to select the books that I want. Some people ask me sometimes, is there someone who gives you the books you have to do? I say, no, they're the ones I want. But when Earl Johnson writes in the final chapter titled The Future of Comfort, he writes, if I hadn't experienced and valued the extraordinary gifts and opportunities that I have been given, how could I sit and companion those who have lost everything? Can't all of us say that? There are those things in our memories. He continues, finding and offering comfort starts in the good times during the joy and celebration of living in relationships and light and love, creating memories and cherishing them. Trauma accumulates and throws life terribly out of balance. Catastrophes are violent and unjust. Disasters take and destroy and erase. Responding to disasters is not for everybody, and he made that point more than once this evening. There are those who may be enduring illness or recent death and need to mourn fully and honestly. It's okay to say, no, now is not a good time. Sometimes I feel that I have spent 10 years at ground zero and that one more death will push me over the edge, that in my woundedness, I can't tolerate one more death. We talked a little bit about that earlier in the program. There are times when even with intense clinical training, small group process and support, disciplined self-care and expertise, death becomes intolerable. Any death. And he continues, finding comfort is about our need to help other people. Finding comfort is about helping ourselves by helping other people. As a famous American chaplain once said, it's about being deeply enough connected with ourselves and the ground of being, in capitals, referring to God then, that we are able to accurately take in the available information and use it with wisdom for the well-being of others and self. Even with profound faith, group nurture, prayer, and the support of a wise and seasoned team, part of our humanity is the realization no one is immune. Don't forget then how precious life is and how powerful love is. Tell someone now that you love him or her. Pray for peace as if it depended on you alone. Come back next Sunday and amplify with us.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky, but Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Black Friday deals are going on all month long. Save up to 45% site-wide, plus free professional installation right now at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Once upon an office so dreary, Wendy's HR presentation made everyone weary.
Was it a bore?
A snore. Could have used more charm, for sure.
That's it?
Wendy opened Canva, looking ecstatic. She began to work her magic.
Docs, prints, presentations galore. All in one design. Not dull anymore.
The next day, Wendy wowed the crowd. They clapped loud.
I feel so proud.
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at canva.com.